This is the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN. Once again, here's Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the second hour of your Sunday Spin on this sunny Super Bowl Sunday in downtown Chicago. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase studio, and I'm joined by Illinois Democratic Comptroller Susana Mendoza. And frankly, Comptroller, it's my first chance to see you in quite a while, and since your victory in November and your inauguration, welcome to the studio this morning.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Before we begin, I want to I mentioned earlier in the program that Governor Rauner was appeared before the Chicago Tribune's editorial board last week, where he discussed a variety of things. And one of those I asked him about was a letter sent at the end of last month to your legal counsel. This was the governor's general counsel, over the issue of Attorney General Lisa Madigan's effort in St. Clair County Circuit Court. There's a court order that requires state employees to be paid. And Lisa Madigan, in her filing, says that a Supreme Court decision clarified that the Constitution requires that there has to be a specific budget appropriation for employees to get paid. And so she has gone to the St. Clair County Court, basically trying to get a February 28th, end of the month, deadline on whether employees can be paid. The governor's office saying that they have concerns that this could precipitate a crisis, and they asked that you continue to pay state employees regardless of any actions from the court. Here's Governor Rauner when I asked him about this.
If the order gets lifted, then she's in a decision, in a position to decide whether to pay people or not.
Well, by virtue of that judge's, if the judge lifts it, by virtue of the Supreme Court decision,
then she could decide herself whether to pay or not. Yes, and I'm encouraging her to decide to pay, for sure.
But that would appear to be a violation of the state constitution.
No, I don't agree. My lawyers wouldn't agree to that.
So that's the governor's interpretation. I mean, my question was, you like every statewide elected official, like every member of the General Assembly, is sworn to uphold the state constitution. And while I think everyone agrees no one wants to see state workers getting caught in the political football of this lengthy budget impasse, what happens if the St. Clair County judge lifts that order?
So it's really clear I would be in violation of the law if I continued to pay. And, you know, the governor, I think, has a habit of not paying attention to the state constitution. And for him to not, I'm not going to say like, actually, he did. He basically went out of his way to put this on me, to somehow deflect to me and to ask me, basically demand that I break the law. And that's not going to happen. I mean, like, he's not above the law. I'm not above the law. The law is the law. It's very clear. And I'm going to adhere to it at every step of the way.
Now, of course, we're speaking in a speculative sense because we don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what the judge could ultimately, you know, adjust some kind of a ruling, extend a time period, things like that.
Sure.
But it would seem from that 2015 Supreme Court decision that it's pretty clear that the Constitution is very plain in its language about you have to have an appropriation passed by the legislature and signed into law to make these payments.
That's correct. And my job is going to be to, you know, adhere to the Constitution and to follow whatever court ruling happens. So I'm going to abide by the law.
What are your feelings about the fact that the Attorney General decided to enter the fray now? And, of course, we've heard all kinds of speculation. She actually wrote a piece in the State Journal Register in Springfield explaining her rationale behind it and had hoped that the six-month stopgap budget and post-election would be enough to start forging some kind of compromise, but ultimately decided that the fact that state employees get paid has prevented a compromise rather than enhanced the opportunity for one.
Right. The concept that the governor is saying that the Attorney General is trying to create a crisis is just so, it's sad and it's laughable at the same time, because if he thinks that she's trying to create a crisis, it just shows a disconnect from reality that we are in the worst fiscal crisis that our state has ever been in. I, as the Illinois Comptroller, see this more so than anybody up close and personal. It really can't get that much worse. Your average person may not be feeling the reality of how bad this crisis is because, in fact, if you need to go get your driver's license, you can, right? The facility is still open. If you need state police, they're available. They're still around, right? So I think the Attorney General is saying without an appropriation, the state constitution is clear that we cannot be making these payments. And we're, you know, with the Supreme Court case, clearly in violation. So I don't know if that's true. That's what a judge will determine. I think the fact that the governor is trying to deflect blame from where it really lies, and I believe it lies with the fact that he has not adhered to his constitutional duty, which is very clear. It's not my opinion. It's not a Democratic or a Republican thing. It's what the state constitution clearly says in Article 8, Section 2, that the governor shall prepare and submit to the General Assembly a balanced budget proposal. That's what it says. It says the governor shall prepare it, not maybe should think about it or, you know, should prepare. It says the governor shall prepare. There's no wiggle room in shall. And it says to the General Assembly is who he has to present it to, not the other way around. So look, if the Constitution said in Article 8, Section 2, that the Illinois General Assembly shall prepare and submit to the governor for his consideration a balanced budget proposal, then I would be harping on the General Assembly to do their job. But the Constitution is very clear. And it clearly says that the governor shall prepare and submit to the General Assembly for their action a balanced budget proposal. We are now going into a third year without that balanced budget proposal. He hasn't done it once. He hasn't done it twice. And as a result of that, my office is responsible for having to pay $11.2 billion in bill backlogs, right? That's how bad of a situation we're in. We've had 6 downgrades to our credit since Governor Rauner has taken office. Our state has never been worse off financially, yet this governor's personal finances have more than tripled since he was sworn in. I mean, you have to acknowledge that there's a massive disconnect between the reality that he's living in and the reality of your average person in the state of Illinois. And so, you know, I look at my role as this opportunity to really tell the story of what's happening in this state and to try to deflect blame from where it should be, which is with him, right? He's like the quarterback of the team. I mean, tonight's the Super Bowl, right? You're looking at Tom Brady or whoever the quarterbacks are. What's the job of the quarterback? It's to get the ball, which in this case would be a budget proposal, and launch it, throw it to his receivers. You know, let's look at that as the General Assembly so that they can then take it into the end zone and score a touchdown, right? Equivalent to passing a budget. Now, if the quarterback isn't doing his job, what happens? He gets sacked or he gets replaced. And I really think that that's kind of like a good analogy for what we're living in the state of Illinois right now. Our quarterback is just not doing his job. He's not leading the team. And he's putting all of the blame on the legislature as if it's their job per the Constitution. It's not. I mean, really, just pull the Constitution, read it. You'll see that this is your job. And also, take time to read the Constitution, the part that says that I am not allowed to pay without an appropriation, so that, you know, this does not become an issue of like, oh, Comptroller Mendoza, it's her fault if the state goes into crisis, or it's the Attorney General's fault. It's like enough of the blame game, enough of the deflection. Take some responsibility. Lead the state. You're now going into your third year. You're not a rookie to this anymore. You can't call yourself an outsider. It's as insider as you get, and it's time for him to do his job.
Now, I will say, during his editorial board appearance, he maintained that he did present balanced budgets in his budget proposals.
As you know, that's just not true. That is clearly an alternative fact. He did not at any point present a balanced budget proposal. He presented, in his mind, what were balanced budget proposals based on situations for revenue that he knew were never actually going to happen. For example, the pension reform, which was found to be unconstitutional. And so you can't predicate, and the actual Constitution says that, a budget proposal based on, revenue that does not exist, right? So the governor would have to, during his budget proposal, present a budget plan that clearly shows how we're going to pay for things. In other words, revenue, what revenue is going to be out there, whether it's, you know, through his tax increases or whatever you want to call it. And also, those expenditures that we make as a state cannot exceed the revenues that are coming into the state. So one of his other budget proposals, which is probably, it sounds like, based on that Tribune editorial board meeting, that he's going to present in next month, or this month, I should say, sounds like the same thing he did last year, which is, you know, wanting authority from the General Assembly to be able to veto every single line item that he wants to do. Again, he's putting his job in the hands of the General Assembly. Part of doing a budget proposal is to, as the governor, lay out what your priorities are. So it's not the legislature's job to give you a full veto authority. You have that when you're actually writing up your budget proposal. You can say right now what it is that you think should be cut and cut that in your budget proposal. You can say right now where you think the revenue should be coming from and put those into your budget proposal. And that's what a budget proposal is all about. It's nobody else's job but his to actually do the proposal, because according to Article 8, Section 2 of the Constitution of Illinois, it says that the governor shall prepare and submit to the General Assembly a balanced budget proposal. Then it goes to the General Assembly, and these guys actually have to get to work on trying to pass that budget. So they have a responsibility, too. But it's kind of like the alphabet. It goes in order, A, B, C, D, etc. A is the governor actually preparing and submitting a balanced budget proposal. B is then the legislature taking action on that balanced budget proposal, working with him on the things that they agree with or don't agree with, coming to compromise, negotiating. That's where you negotiate and compromise. And then actually putting it up for a vote, passing it, and getting our state back on the right track. I would like to be able to, as C, do my job of do my job of paying the state's bills on time. That would be like an amazing thing to be able to do. The treasurer of the state of Illinois, who's got a really difficult job right now, we're losing millions of dollars because he can't be investing the state's funds in long-term vehicles. Why? Because we need the liquidity to be able to, on a day-to-day basis, triage the situation of paying for hospice care or the most vulnerable in this state. He would, I'm sure, like to be able to invest more money in different vehicles that would bring millions of dollars in interest gains to, or dividends to, the state of Illinois. That can't happen as long as there is no budget proposal that the legislature can then sink their teeth into trying to pass. And I think that's what the average person out there doesn't know. They blame everything on the legislature because the governor's done a great job and spent millions of dollars in trying to frame that narrative. But don't take my opinion for it. Seriously, just Google the Illinois State Constitution, read Article 8, Section 2, and you're going to see that it clearly says that the governor shall prepare and present a balanced budget proposal to the General Assembly, and then they're supposed to get to work.
We're speaking with Illinois State Comptroller Susana Mendoza. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson here in the Allstate Showcase Studio in Tribune Tower on Michigan Avenue, joined by Susana Mendoza, Democrat from Chicago, Illinois State Comptroller. Madam Comptroller, on Friday, Governor Rauner unveiled a new member of his administrative team, a familiar name perhaps, certainly to you. He named as deputy governor, looks like a new position. We have had deputy governors in the past, but named your predecessor, his appointee as comptroller, Leslie Munger, to that job. I'm curious what you think of the fiscal, if not political, implications of that.
Well, let me just start by saying that I wish her well, and I hope her very first job assignment is to sit down with the governor and figure out a way for him to abide by his constitutional duty of presenting, you know, preparing and submitting a balanced budget proposal to the General Assembly so we can get to work. So first and foremost, having said that, you think about the fact that, as far as I know, we have already like four governor-related titles, at least, right? So we got two deputy governors, a lieutenant governor, and a governor, and we still have no budget. So really, at the end of the day, that's what this is about for me. Nothing can improve in this state without a budget. I don't know why we'd need four governor titles to make that happen. It still hasn't happened. But it is what it is. So I think being fiscally prudent has not been the hallmark of this administration. It's part of the reason why we're in the situation that we are, which is dire and, in fact, a crisis.
I mentioned earlier on the prospect of having to get up every morning and look at this backlog of bills owed to vendors, and just the time span, too, of what it takes for some of these vendors to get paid. How does it work? How do you determine what discretionary authority do you have to determine how the bills get paid?
Right. So, like, if all things were great, it would be an easy job where you just, you know, as you get a bill, you pay it, right? That would be the ideal situation. But when you're looking at $11.2 billion in a bill backlog, it's impossible to do that. So we are looking at trying to prioritize the most vulnerable. That's why on the very first day that I took office, I moved all employee bonuses to the back of the line. We're going to be prioritizing social service providers and people who are in dire need of funding. Otherwise, they'll close their doors before we give bonuses to state employees. You might recall during my election, the governor and through the controller went ahead and approved $4 million in bonuses to state employees in the eve of the election. And that was unconscionable when you're considering that seniors are going hungry without their Meals and Wheels, and students are dropping out of college because they're not getting their MAP grant funding, and small businesses aren't getting the small business development money that they need. So now, my predecessor said it was impossible to differentiate between base pay and bonus pay, and I argued contrary to that. And on my very first day in office, I got my team together and I said, hey, we're going to make this happen. And on day three, we actually gave the order to all of the state agencies that moving forward, all of the vouchers that they submit to me for payment have to be delineated, whether it's base pay or bonus pay. And we've moved bonus pay to the back of the line. And so it's all about prioritizing in times of fiscal crisis who we have to pay first. And it's not an easy job. It's an incredibly difficult job. If you think about the fact that this $11.2 billion budget backlog, I think the number is just so abstract, it's hard for people to even understand what that means. But they're more than just numbers on a spreadsheet. This is a situation that tells a story about thousands of people in the state of Illinois that are suffering. Just last week, I got an email from a woman who's a professor at the university, I should say at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to be traveling to Carbondale next week to meet with her. I'm really trying to go out of my way to be a controller that listens, that tries to understand this issue so that I can then tell the story about what this budget impasse means. What's the cost in human capital of an $11.2 billion deficit right now? And so this woman needed specialty medical care and had to go to St. Louis to get it, because it was specialized. And she had an appointment. There was a terrible ice storm in Southern Illinois a few weeks ago. The roads were closed. She had to cancel the appointment. When she called to reschedule her appointment, she was told that they're no longer taking any employees with state insurance or people who actually even reside in Illinois. And so she now has to go without the specialized medical care or try to find it elsewhere. And it just complicates her life even more. And she believes, like, how is this even legal? I pay into my insurance fully. And now I'm being told that because I live in Illinois, because of this budget impasse, they're not going to give me the medical care that I need. And these are stories that I hear every day. I think that I have a responsibility as a new controller to advocate for people and to actually tell their stories in a way that people can connect with. They understand that this is not just a number on a spreadsheet. $11.2 billion represents people who are going without. Let me tell you what else it represents. It represents almost $700 million that we will never be investing in people, if not upwards of $700 million. And what we could buy with that, I kind of want to run this by you. Business is important. We should be investing in small business growth. We could spend $5 million on that. Domestic violence intervention and prevention, we could fund that to the tune of $49 million. Home-delivered meals for seniors, it might be the only meal they get and their only point of contact with humans that day, $13 million. Home health care, $15 million. Hospice care for the absolutely most vulnerable people in the state, we could fund that at $77 million. And early intervention programs for children with disabilities or just children who need an additional help getting started on the right foot at $85 million. MAP grants for our students. If any of us have kids in college or know kids that are dropping out of school because they're not getting their MAP grants, we could fund that at $430 million. That alone, $674 million in wasted human opportunity is what we're looking at. And we can still fund more just with the interest payments on the $11.2 billion that we owe people.
That's what that $700 million represents. That
$700 million represents late payments or late penalty for making our payments late, right? It's interest payments on these late fees. And so every time that we go without paying a bill on time, we're incurring a 12% penalty on that. It is criminal. So forget about the fact that we're just 11, I should say not just, but we clearly have $11.2 billion of backlog. Besides the fact that we owe all that money and people aren't getting paid and businesses are closing or social service providers are closing their doors and unable to help people, there's also this late payment cost that is running to the tune of almost $1 billion. And again, that's money that we'll never be able to invest in people. It is so fiscally irresponsible. It's such a dereliction of duty that this needs to stop. And I feel that it is really my obligation as the Illinois Comptroller of the State's Chief Fiscal Officer to talk about how the fact that we are now going into a third year without a budget because this governor is just so married to his pet projects is really costing the state in a very significant way. And I have yet to meet a single business owner who tells me that they will either come to Illinois if we pass term limits or leave Illinois unless if we pass term limits. Business owners, what they want to know is, are they going to be able to make their payroll? Can they plan for the future growth of their business? That is not what's happening today. We are bleeding out jobs, even with a lower tax rate. When they let the tax rate expire, we haven't seen any job creation because of that. So this concept that businesses are only leaving because of taxes is absurd. They're leaving in large part because we are going into a third year without a budget. And the governor, who is supposedly, you know, a great business mind, has clearly failed the state when it comes to helping businesses and creating jobs in this state. I guess he just created one on Friday, right? But that might be the only job that I've seen him create since he's been governor.
That's Illinois Democratic Comptroller, Illinois' Susana Mendoza, Democrat from Chicago. Madam Comptroller, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We'll be back with more right after this.